All right, welcome back. Second half hour tonight of Who's Talking. We thank Dr. Bogle and, of course, Gene Arnett for joining us in the first half hour. And we've got another former Cavalier on the line now, Case Luzar, that played in the early 2000s, did a little work at fullback and tight end. And as Frank put in the newsletter today, he was really good at blocking. We could probably use a little bit of that right now. I think Matt Johns could use a little blocking once in a while.
I tell you what.
Protection. Maybe Case has another year of eligibility.
He'd like Case to bring some of his friends from 2002, the team that went to the Continental Tire Bowl. And
West Virginia or Pitt?
Crushed West Virginia.
Yeah. And then they played Pitt the next year in the Tire Bowl.
They did. Mules.
But at any rate.
Those were the good old days.
Talk about Case.
Case is a walk-on. He grew up in Williamsburg. Nicer guy you'll never meet.
What about me?
Hubba, that's a whole other topic. See how Hubba is always fishing for compliments?
If
you'd actually go to the game and watch the game with me, maybe I'd cut you some slack. But all right.
Well, Friday night was a good one to miss, I must admit.
You're going to pay for that. You're going to pay for that. Case, first off, welcome to Who's Talking, and thank you for coming back after a couple years hiatus. We want to catch up with you a little bit later in the segment, but just wondered about your thoughts over the last three games that the Wahoos have played, and what do you see that you like, and what needs to be fixed immediately?
Oh, geez, if I had the answers to those questions, I'd be making a lot more than I do.
You're a famous grad assistant from UVA. You got to know the who's, the what's, the why for's, and
the
why not.
Says in your newsletter he's working IT, so you know he's smart.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
I'm just like every other armchair fan now who tries to call it like they see it but is largely uninformed. Obviously, running for 40 yards a game doesn't do you much. Certainly something that I know that they noticed during the game. I know that they'll be staring them in the face when they watch the film, and obviously something you got to correct before your next opponent.
You know, one thing that I've been puzzled by is this decision to force Vincent Croce, who's a brute, trying to teach him how to play fullback here in his last year and a half at Virginia. And I see him go in the hole, and sometimes he runs right by a linebacker or a lineman, and I just don't think that's something that you can teach a guy in 1 year. Why did they keep him on defense, where he likes to hit people, and let him just help the defensive line? But talk to us a little bit about the nature of the blocking, because when teams blitz, it seems to work almost every time. And people just aren't getting picked up. What are your thoughts?
I remember just hearing as I was playing, and then when you watch games now or you read the stuff online, that a running back's worth certainly it is, what can they do catching the ball and running the ball? More so, you'll hear a lot of can they block? Can they pick up blitzes? That's kind of the easiest way to endear yourself to a coach or to your quarterback by being able to protect them. I remember from my own playing days that was at least something that got me on the field, kind of knowing what to do and where to be, and then trying to do a halfway decent job of it. But certainly when I switched from tight end to fullback, there was a bit of a difference blocking a guy who was 8 inches away from you versus trying to run and hit a moving target.
You know, Case, all teams, all coaches want to run the ball between the tackles occasionally. It seems like at least in the first four games, Virginia's had difficulty doing that. And Frank has mentioned in the past, you know, we have running backs that are, you know, smaller in stature. Is that the factor, or are we just not being able to open up any holes to give them space to get through?
I don't know. I haven't watched things, admittedly, too closely. But one thing that sticks out, I mean, I don't think football is that complicated of a game. And I like things boiled down pretty simply. And one thing that just stuck with me as a player and then that I heard over and over again working as a GA on the staff on the offensive side is that offense is about creating space and defense is about creating that space away. So whether you're trying to get the ball outside or, you know, stretch a play and cut it back behind your tight end or your tackle, I mean, that's the basic philosophy, and we're just having a hard time doing that.
You know, Case, I was looking at some of the players that you used to play with, Billy McMullen, Angelo Crowell, Monsanto Pope, he was a brute, Evan Rootson, Matt Schaub, Chris Canty, Daryl Blackstock, you know, Mike Mullins, who's been a guest on their show. Heath Miller was a tight end star back there in 2002-03.
No wonder we won some games back in those days.
We had some players, DeBrickashaw Ferguson in 2004, but Daryl Blackstock in 2003. You got to play with and I'm sure practice against some real talent. Don't you think there's talent on the field? I mean, it seems to me we've got some speed at certain positions and we've got some brutes in other positions, but they're just not in sync, are they?
Yeah, I don't know about, you know, what they're discussing in meetings and what they're repping out at practice. I do think there's enough talent to be winning games. When I played, we had good recruiting classes, but I don't think we were I think we'd be lucky if we were getting a top 25 class during some of those years. I mean, Brick was a big recruit, but he looked like a receiver when he showed up. Guys like Crowell or Schaub, they were all state kind of guys, but kind of worked themselves into being good players just by working hard, by knowing what to do. Nobody would say Matt Schaub had the strongest arm in the world, but he just kind of knew what to do with the ball and how to get rid of it. And I think, you know, the current team has to have those kind of players as well. I don't think you can read into recruiting rankings but so much, but there is something to be said for the guys who are analyzing these players and then our coaches who are recruiting them. And, you know, I do think there's talent there. You know, how you develop it is certainly the other side of the coin.
From a coaching perspective, you were a GA. What would you expect the next couple of weeks of practice to be like? I assume, I know when I played, I never wanted to make the coaches angry, and I have a sense the coaches may be a little irritated, which is not good for the players.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd expect some things to be a little bit physical. I mean, I know guys are frustrated, and sometimes just lining up against your buddy and going at it for 2 or 3 hours is a good way to get some frustration out. I know despite the record, despite the stats, that all those guys are working hard. They all want to win. So you can't really hold that against them. And that's the tough part, because you know that the work that they're putting in, because it's the same kind of work that you put in, and sometimes you won and sometimes you came up short. I think something that you've heard a lot from Coach London immediately after the game and from the players in the last couple of days too, is to just, you know, learn what there is to be learned from the game and from the previous 4 weeks and then move on. And that's something that I recall happening a couple times in my career when we come off of losing 2 or 3 games or just a bad loss. I distinctly, literally remember being out there as a team and burying game tape behind a goalpost as a little bit of a motivational gimmick, but just symbolic of, this is behind us. I think it was at the halfway point of the season, and it was Coach Groh's way of saying, those last 6 games are done. Let's move on. I think it was my junior year when we went and played West Virginia. So we ultimately had a pretty good season after that. So I think you get the frustration out. Going into a bye week is nice. You got a lot of time to work on some things. But you do need to move on. And, you know, it's possible that you could still win a conference championship, and that's what you're working for. I mean, that possibility exists. Whether the odds are in your favor is a different story, but the slate is wiped clean as far as the conference goes for us.
Well, you know, one thing's for certain, nobody thought that Oregon would cough up 60 points at home to Utah, albeit Utah is a plenty good football team. Seems to me Syracuse is playing better than anybody would have expected. Wake Forest is not playing very well. Georgia Tech, surprisingly, has two losses. Pitt, I believe, is 2-2, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
And Virginia Tech is 2-2. Duke, I think, has surprised people at 3-1. And Miami has got airplanes flying over the stadium saying, fire the coach.
For the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Al Golden, be careful what you wish for, me and the head coach down there for the Hurricanes.
That's pretty tough when you haven't lost yet. And by the way, a correction, Pitt is 2-1. They're
2-1. They haven't played four games.
Yeah.
Do us all a favor, Case. How does the Virginia offense get physical and get focused and get synchronized? Because they cannot play another game like they did Friday night and expect to have any kind of wins. So what has to happen?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always that let's look ourselves in the mirror kind of thing and see what we can control in terms of our attitude and our effort. Because those, among the many things that you can't control, you can't really control how the defense is going to line up, who's going to be healthy or not from the other side, whether they're going to blitz on third and long or just play in coverage. You can't control that, but you can control your attitude and your effort and whether or not you are you've studied up on your opponent, you're in sync with the game plan, and you know where to be every snap. So that's first and foremost. With the way we've been playing, you can't afford to give away plays with mental mistakes. Second is, if we think about our running game, as I said earlier, offense, you're trying to create space. I remember as a GA, you're putting the game plan together. A lot of the plays in our running game were quick passes, where you're just trying to get the ball in somebody's hands really quick in space and let them go to work. So perhaps whether it's, quick screens or just quick timing routes, you can think of that as a bit of your passing game and take a little bit of pressure off of the five or six guys up front to be road graders.
One thing I've noticed, and I've asked just about anybody and everybody associated with the program, why is the offensive line coach rotating players like a Chinese laundry? I mean, there are linemen moving up and down the line of scrimmage and playing. A tackle is playing on one side of the field, and he's on the other end of the line. It just seems like chaos. And the tight ends, they at times they look good, and other times they go invisible. The only constant really has been Smoke Mizell and the wide receivers, particularly Kinane Severn and, to a lesser extent, Keon Johnson. Olamide Zaccheaus has been a pleasant surprise, and Albert Reed, the transfer in from Maryland, has, I think, given us some consistency. But the O-line, to me, is just – it's confusing. I mean, I don't know. I've asked a lot of people, and I can't get too many straight answers. And, the right tackle is playing left tackle. Sometimes the right tackle is out of the game. The left tackle is moved in. Whitmire comes off the bench and plays left or right side sometimes. Nobody will tell us what happened to Ryan Dahl, who was a 5 or 6 game starter at left guard last year. It just seems to me offensive line is supposed to be a cohesive unit with five guys playing the same position on every down and learning to play together. What do you think?
I don't know what our schemes are. I mean, I think of some teams that I've seen over the years, and I think of Tech on defense in particular. They have their boundary corner and their field corner, and that's kind of the position that you play, not just straight up left or right. And I've also seen teams on offense where they do kind of swap tackles. Part of it could be that. Part of it could just be, my gosh, things aren't working. We're kind of desperate to try something to find the right combination of guys against the guys in front of them. So that's unfortunately my best guess is to – as to what Coach Borbley's trying to do there.
What about Pitt? Obviously, Pitt becomes a big game all of a sudden because Virginia, to to rescue this season, they've got to turn it around fast. So the coaches have a big task ahead of them as they get ready for the Panthers.
Yeah, I know all those guys know what's at stake to not get off to a slow start in the conference as they did in the first four games, to try to tune out the noise from outside of the locker room, and to to go to Pitt on the road and get a win. So I think there's obvious writing on the wall, and I know that those guys aren't blind and deaf to that. Certainly, again, having a bye week to prepare for that is in their favor.
Well, Case, we appreciate your joining us tonight. As we told Gene Arnett, hopefully we can have you back when things are a little more upbeat and optimistic. It's hard to, it wasn't a pretty picture on Friday night, so it's hard to paint it anything other than that. But at any rate, we sure appreciate your time and your visit with us, and we wish you the very best. Look forward to having you back.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. Keep up the good work.
All right, former Cavalier Case Luzar, we're going to go to our final break. When we come back, Olympic report, and we'll look at the upcoming ACC schedule for this coming weekend, which does not include Virginia. So stay tuned. We'll be back. This is Who's Talking.